Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit menstclinic.com.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. And right now we bring to you a special guest, Super Bowl winning head coach, and he did win it for the Ravens, and they are our enemies this week. It is Brian Billick. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon to you.
Is it okay for me to say that we're enemies for this week because we're on opposing teams?
No, we're supposed to soften the rhetoric, right? We're everybody's lowering the rhetoric. So just tell me someone of not your persuasion this week.
Okay, I will try to soften the rhetoric even further. You've won a Super Bowl in the last generation. Can you give us tips about how to get that done?
Yeah. Well, you got to be real, real good, and you got to be real, real lucky. Obviously, things got to fall into place. It's going to be this is an interesting year. I with you know, exception of maybe Kansas City. And even they have barely won their first two games, but very impressive that they have against two good teams. I don't remember a year where it was so wide open, the opportunity, both in the AFC and the NFC, and particularly the NFC, where it's so wide open an opportunity for so many different teams to make it in the playoffs and make a Super Bowl run. So from that standpoint, I think it's an exciting time.
Yeah, there have been a lot of predictable groups at times, and this year does feel like there's a lot of different options there. When you look at Baltimore's start here, how frustrating is their two first losses, the way that it's happened, and feeling like you're a good team, and then you're starting off 0-2?
Yeah, because you're so close to being 2-0. I mean, you're talking basically two, maybe three plays to flip that script. It doesn't feel that way. And the difficulty that Baltimore's dealing with right now, along with the fact that they're coming up now on a three-game stretch,
yes,
where they've got to go to the Cowboys, they come home against the Bills, and then go on the road against Cincinnati. So, you know, they've got a task here, and it's in the atmosphere right now because, you know, when you start 0-2, then all the outside chatter is, well, there's only 11% chance of making the playoffs. No 0-2 Raven team has ever made it into the playoffs. Now, these guys weren't a part of all that, and they don't have to internalize that, but they're going to hear it. And until they win that game and against good teams, and they could continue to be a good team, they could continue to be a playoff-caliber team and sit there and be 0-5, and that's a scary thought.
And I'm glad that you brought that up because I looked at the schedule and just wondered about that as well. How do you make sure that no one's thinking about Buffalo or Cincinnati or 0-4, 0-5, and they're like, hey, that's could all happen, but it won't happen if you just beat Dallas?
Yeah, that part's easy for a team that's 0-2 because you are just desperate and have that steely eye. What do we have to do to get that win? That problem exists if you're 2-0. You know, and you're playing a couple good teams, you've got someone on the horizon, and you're feeling pretty good about yourself, then that's more of a challenge to stay focused on the task at hand and not just assume we're going to beat this team because we have another better team the week before, the week after that. But when it comes to a team that's 0-2, believe me, that whole organization, the last thing they're thinking about is Buffalo or Cincinnati. They're all knowing that this, and particularly having to go on the road to what is still a good Cowboy team, a very capable Cowboy team, in spite of what happened last weekend. Believe me, they are focused on that.
Coach,
Coach, were you much for props whenever you were coaching to kind of give guys a visual influence, kind of like in Major League when they had the owner and they were taking off the patches and stuff? Did you ever use any props like that throughout your career?
Yeah, you got to be careful because you can trivialize it. But there are times where if you think you can help bring focus or a reminder. I mean, when you sit in front of your quasi-millionaires on Wednesday morning and deliver the game plan and the keys to success, many times there's a theme, and if there's something you can do, however subtle, to do something like that, sure. You don't want to do it too much because then it becomes sophomoric and a little trite. But yeah, you'll do that occasionally.
Okay, I was just kind of curious about that. Sometimes we're always like, hey, let's throw this into the clubhouse, let's throw it into the locker room and see how that works. The Cowboys.
Well, I remember Jack Del Rio when he was in Jacksonville, didn't he? He put a big stump in the middle.
Yep.
Of it with a big axe. Because his theme was just keep stopping.
Uh-huh.
Right? Just keep one stop. And one of his kickers darn near took his foot off, screwing around with the axe. So you got to be careful with some of these props.
So we've never done anything that dumb, but I did want to warn you, at times our show has been described as sophomoric and trite. So I just
Okay.
Good.
The Saints, they're with Clint Kubiak, that running scheme, the zone blocking scheme, the outside zone, inside zone, the way they ran it to perfection against the Cowboys, and the Cowboys didn't look like they had many answers at all to stop that run. And then this is a very good Baltimore running team, but how are they different, and where do you think that lines up for the Cowboys?
Well, first let's talk about New Orleans and just how good, you know, this New Orleans team, what it's done the last 2 weeks. And you can qualify by saying, well, it was at Carolina, but Carolina's divisional rivals for them. So that you got to qualify that a little bit. The fact that it was on the road against Dallas to score on the first six possessions. They scored on every possession in the first half last week against Carolina. This offense is really stacking up to be something spectacular. I mean, Derek Carr had over 240 yards throwing on 16 attempts, and they ran the ball, like you said, brilliantly. And again, Kubiak, with the influence of his dad and going back to the Shanahan days, have got the zone, and Alvin Kamara is absolutely brilliant. You know, it takes a certain type of runner to maximize that zone scheme, and Alvin Kamara is absolutely brilliant with it. I don't think, and taking, you know, yeah, Dallas struggled, and yeah, they're going to have to address that, and they're going to get another challenge, different challenge, because obviously with Baltimore, it's all about Derrick Henry up the middle, a lot of counters, and then obviously the biggest threat is Lamar Jackson, then pulls it out and goes out around the edge.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a totally different challenge in terms of how you need to scheme it. You better put eight people in the box. You better make sure that you keep Lamar in the pocket, because that's the thing that's going to get you beat. And a totally different challenge in the running game than what they saw against New Orleans.
Please don't say Lamar out to the edge, because we've had edge covering issues in general, and that's going to give me nightmares the rest of the week. Actually, I kind of hope it does give the Cowboys nightmares, so yeah, they're prepared for it.
Straighten up a little bit. That would be a good option.
Be a good option.
Coach, also, I wanted to just kind of joke around with you here. My middle son, he's in middle school football right now, and I talked to one of our coworkers. He was a former scout, offensive line guy. My kid's playing guard, and he said, hey, just make sure he has his stance correct and he knows how to get out of his stance. What's the next thing? What do I need to build for this foundation for my son?
Well, make sure your eyes are open.
Okay.
That always helps. I was coaching my grandson's nine-year-old team, which was a lot of fun. A little different, you know, a little different focus. You know, it's okay. Where's your helmet? Do you have a ride home after practice? That type of thing. But it's great fun because they're learning the physicality of the game, and starting in your stance and having good balance, that is important. The next one is to basically run through contact. That's the next step for any young player, that it's okay, get aligned right, know where you're going, but now make sure that you run through any kind of contact. Don't stop, don't catch, don't, because it's counterintuitive a little bit. So, you know, taking that next step, that's the next fun part to try to coach him up.
And if he's pulling as a pulling guard and going the wrong direction of the play, we just need to go back to the basics and work on the playbook, right?
Well, fine, but if even if you do that, then hit somebody and run through them.
There you go.
At least do that.
And I like what you're saying right there. I really, really do. You know, kind of speaking of that, I know he was talking about his younger son. I'm just curious when, and I know training camp has changed, when can you tell if your team innately has toughness or has the ability to just run through people? Because that's been a frequent criticism of the Cowboys.
Well, I think everybody right now questions a little bit, although it's not going to change, the way we run training camps now. You make it very difficult for getting into hitting shape is very real.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You know, you come into camp and you get you're in pretty good cardiovascular shape. You have to get into good muscular, you know, stretch the joints, the hamstrings, the groins, those muscles that are going to be tested and pulled in a unique way in this game. But hitting shape is a legitimate point. And given the way we run training camps, that's harder and harder to do. It's the number one thing I hear from most coaches is they get frustrated that they don't have the opportunity to really get their team in good hitting shape. So that takes a while getting into the season before you do get into hitting shape. But that physicality, that obviously has got to be a part of it. The game has spread out. It's become more multiple. Defenses have gotten smaller. They're in better teams. It's amazing how little base defense is on the field anymore. Less than 5 or 10% of a team's defense is in base defense, where you can really focus on that physicality and where you need to be good and physical. So it's a challenge in today's game to be that kind of physical team.
Yeah, and that's we've been talking about this kind of all morning too. Is, you know, passing numbers look like they're down to start the season, and it just seemed like week one was a little sloppy, and week two here, you're like, oh man, there were some big surprises. San Francisco losing to the Vikings, the way the Rams lost to the Cardinals. How much of, I feel like a lot of what I'm seeing is that there's not as much emphasis put on preseason games. Do you agree with that part?
Yeah, the preparation is different. And so you've got to get up to speed very quickly in the regular season. That takes a while sometimes, and then before you know it, you're getting into that stride, but you're already down 0-2 or 1-3 or something along those lines. So, you know, it is a factor. I think we're seeing a little more running because I think teams are emphasizing the run a little bit more because, like I said, we've seen a sea change. Defenses have gotten smaller, and so people are emphasizing the running game a little bit more. Plus, early in the season, the run game's a little more quantifiable. The passing game, you got to get into rhythm, got to get into coordination with your receivers. And so that, I think that's probably typical and will continue to expand. But the running game, as I look at it, more and more teams, I think, are committing to a little bit more run because defenses are getting a little smaller, getting spread out, and people are challenging that.
Talk with Brian Billick right here on 105.3 The Fan. Now, we've talked a lot throughout the offseason and early in the season about kind of how accepting players are of the guardian caps, and you're starting to see them more in the game and everything like that. I'm curious your thoughts about that piece of technology, and then I do get the sense that you've got your own work going on with some football equipment right now.
Yeah, the equipment that to protect the players, the safety of the players, it's incredible the advances we have made. And just like you were talking about, that cap, the training methods that we use at X-Tech Pads, and I'm very proud of being associated with X-Tech Pads. It's our 12th year. We're the number one pad in all of pro football, number one pad in major college, huge high school presence, Modern Day, Westlake Katy, Bishop Gorman. Parents need to get online and check out this new wave of technology because pads, the one thing that hasn't changed since forever is pads. Big guys wear big pads, little guys wear little pads. But until now, X-Tech Pads has done that. It's taken to another level. It's not one size fits all. The pads are for you based on height, weight, position, injury history, as it should be. All you need to do is go to xtechpads.com. Look at the pad. If you get a chance, feel the pad. The difference between that and the other pads on the product, the old school of, you know, just the old hand-me-downs that so often happen in high school. Parents need to get on and check this out, because X-Tech Pads is the new wave of technology in taking care of our players by way of pads.
I know this is a long shot. Is there any way I can get you to say go Cowboys before you go?
Hey, my wife used to work for the Dallas Cowboys.
Oh.
Okay, her whole family's from Dallas. So I got no problem saying go Cowboys. Absolutely.
Yeah.
We're an equal opportunity household here, and I say that only because, you know, like they say, happy wife, happy life.
That's for sure.
Good call. You're a smart man. Thank you very much for the time. We really appreciate it, good sir.
Glad to do it.
There you go. Brian Billick, Super Bowl winning champion coach with the Ravens, right here on 105.3 The Fan. And we do have a cut now of him saying go Cowboys.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, first time we talked to him was at the Super Bowl face-to-face.
He's a nice
guy.
That
was awesome. I really always enjoy it. I got a lot of respect for, you know, I mean, dude won a Super Bowl. I got a lot of respect for the way he coaches and the way he did things.
Did you get anybody last week to say go Cowboys that you're interviewing for the other team?
No.
No, we didn't.
And that
did you get anybody for Cleveland?
Problems.
Yeah. Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
Who said go Cowboys for Cleveland?
The whole city.
I don't recall asking, but if we can make this a trend, I'm glad to shift around some of our interviews and be like, hey, just say go Cowboys and we'll win, okay? We're the KNC Masterpiece.
Who do the Cowboys play next week? The Giants?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you don't need anybody. That's like a scrimmage game.
Coming up next, it's time for the Tuesday tailgate. Bama rolls, our buddy makes the Hall of Fame, and let's learn about the Chicago Physicians and Surgeons football team.
What?
Next, right here on The Fan. KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. It is time for the Tuesday tailgate, and we bring on the man who knows more about college football than anybody I'm pretty sure I've ever met in my entire life. That is Carter Freeman. But Carter, we're going to start with something that I don't think you know.
You met Bob Stoops like 2 months ago.
I think Carter knows more about college football than Bob Stoops does.
I met Bob Stoops too, and I don't really remember that. That was like a whiteout event.
Yeah.
Blackout, yeah. I have a picture with him, so that's cool. But the actual
event, you know what happened.
Do not remember.
All right, so Notre Dame put a beat down on Purdue after losing the week prior. So SportsCenter said the 66 points against Purdue are the most following a loss for Notre Dame in a season since 1908. That season, the Irish lost to Michigan and then defeated the Chicago Physicians and Surgeons 88-0 in the next game. Now, that's the beginning of this story. I decided to investigate more because I became super fascinated by it. They played several times, Notre Dame and the Chicago School for Physicians and Surgeons. Notre Dame outscored the Physicians and Surgeons 265-9. However, those 9 points came in 1896 and 1899, when the School of Physicians and Surgeons defeated Notre Dame 4-0 and 5-0.
This was back when
football used to be
two
weird.
Safeties.
Yeah, touchdowns and were all the point scoring.
Can't throw the ball in the air. That's crazy.
The game was decided by penetration.
This was before Teddy Roosevelt was like, "Hey, we're too many people are dying on the field. We got to figure this out."
Yes,
that is a real thing.
Yes. As is what Corey said.
Mm-hmm.
If you're
Alec doesn't believe me. He's back there shaking his head no.
If he told me to look it up, and I'm not doing that.
You should. If I swear to God this is true. The way they used to decide the winner in tied Texas high school playoff games was which team had the most penetrations. That's a fact.
Fact.
I refuse to put penetration
what
into
was
Google.
The line.
I think it was the 25?
I think you're right, because I went to a Duncanville Carter game where it was decided on that.
Yeah, and like, if you know you have more, you can just like sit on the ball, even though the game is tied, which feels really weird. Now, Carter, the game that we had on our airwaves, let's go ahead and fire off cut number 7. You could have heard this game right here on 105.3 The Fan.
Milroe fires up the sideline, caught, touchdown! Woo! Ryan Williams, the 17-year-old. 31 yards.
So I want to talk about Ryan Williams, but also Wisconsin. They lost their quarterback, Tyler Van Dyke. He's out for the season with an ACL injury. I'm not saying like Wisconsin was going to shake up the world or anything, but that feels like a big loss. And then can you talk about the Alabama 17-year-old wonder kid?
Yeah, for Wisconsin, they're still early, I guess, in their reinvention. They're trying to become more of an air raid, passing first offense, but they're watching that game, they didn't really feel like they were super committed to it.
Yeah.
Because the Big Ten is very ground game, strong athletes at the line of scrimmage, and Wisconsin's trying to do it differently, but they're somewhere in between right now. And I think even if Tyler Van Dyke hadn't gotten hurt, they're still going to lose this game by almost 30 points.
Sure.
Wisconsin's backup was extremely ineffective. But yeah, Ryan Williams for Alabama. I've highlighted him on my articles for 105.3thefan.com, recapping all the college football stuff for three straight weeks because he's been incredible. And he should be a senior in high school this year. And he's caught at least five touchdowns. And they're all long scores.
Yeah.
He's not catching, you know, these 5 yard, like, you know, short touchdown catches right at the goal line. Like, he's catching these balls, taking them all the way down. And he's just incredible. Alabama's offense on the whole is incredible. They had a drive with about 24 seconds left in the second quarter of this game. Two plays, 73 yards in 17 seconds, and they score.
What do you guys think about this gutless decision from Wake Forest? They lost to Ole Miss 40-6. And then they canceled their next game with them.
I think it's hilarious.
That's weak.
Do you?
Yeah, I think it's hilarious.
That's weak.
They were like, we stunk so bad we don't even want to play y'all next year.
Beat up again.
We'll pay a million dollars to not have to play you again.
That's an interesting strategy, is like try to get all these teams that think they're on even footing with you, chump them out and take the buyout. Like, don't you think that's a hard sell for your program? It's like, hey, we had to pay them money so we didn't have to play them again.
Oh, well, some teams pay schools to lose to them.
Very true.
So,
Like Florida State.
Memphis beating Florida State this weekend.
Who do you think is going to lose their job quicker? I mean, I think I know the answer. The Florida head coach or the Florida State head coach?
I really don't know. If I'm a betting man, I would put my money on Florida and Billy Napier, just because Florida State was undefeated last year. Like, there was some semblance of success with Mike Norvell at Florida State. There's been none of that with Billy Napier in Florida.
I know that alumni have been giving millions of dollars to football programs for a long time. Now it's a little bit different because you're paying for the players. What would you do if you were a multimillionaire and you had the last 2 years given $2 million to Florida State and they used it to get a crap quarterback? Like, how mad would you be?
I mean, I'd be pretty upset. Florida State's allegedly spending $12 million on their team this year. That was a number that came out after they lost to Boston College in their second game. So I just assume that these donors just have millions of dollars to waste if they're, you know, throwing them at their school year after year. So, like, it's just going to be another drop in the bucket. And you saw with A&M where they're paying $70+ million for Jimbo not to coach. But yeah, if I'm throwing millions of dollars somewhere, I'm not going to be happy. But it just depends on how much you feel like things need to change. You know, like, how much power do these boosters have to potentially move a Mike Norvell or move a Billy Napier out of their head coaching spot?
Now, Corey, I want to ask you this important question first. If you were the head coach for a football team and there had been given out a whole bunch of cards for, like, different little bits and stuff during the breaks.
Props and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And all the fans started throwing the cards out onto the field and your team had gotten two unsportsmanlike penalties because of this, what would Coach Majors do?
I'd probably keep the cards I have, because all the rest of those cards now are, like, they're all messed up. So I'm going to have the best graded cards out of that group.
And you can give them away at Buffalo Wild Wings on Friday.
Those cards are getting stepped on the field. They're getting messed up. I might have two cards. I'll have the only two left. I win.
That is a great point. Coach Justin Wilcox, cut number 12, he decided to take the ref or lean into the ref's microphone and say this instead.
Our fans, we love you. Stop throwing the cards on the field. That's two 15-yard penalties. Please stop throwing the cards on the field.
Who said Pac-12 After Dark is dead?
And Cal would go on to win 31-10, their first 3-0 start in 5 years.
Wow.
And they play Florida State, speaking of, in Tallahassee this upcoming week. And the Calgarithm, if you look on Twitter for Cal football, what's going on with their takeover of Tallahassee is what they're planning. It's pretty funny. Yep, the Calgarithm.
Aaron Rodgers fired up.
Marshawn Lynch.
Oh, yeah.
Jared Goff.
Yeah.
Jason Kidd.
That's true. You want to name somebody from the University of California?
Murray.
Jaden Ott is there right now. He's a really good running back.
Marcus Simeon.
Did he go to?
Yeah.
Oh.
His dad, Mr. Simeon.
Did we already say Marshawn Lynch?
Yes.
No, I'm done.
You can say him again.
I'm done.
There's a fast wide receiver they had at one point.
DeSean Jackson?
Yeah, there you go. Did you say him already?
I didn't.
All right. Corey, this is something you do know about. Cut number 11. I just want to know, how are you feeling? How proud are you of this moment when Rex Burkhead goes into the Hall of Fame?
Ked and his family honored here. And what a cool moment for him, right? I mean, this is a guy, he goes on and has a great career. First team all Big Ten in Nebraska's first year in this league, a decade in the NFL, won a Super Bowl. And this tonight has to be high on his list, right?
I love it. I mean, I'm dead serious.
He's a good dude.
Covering the kid in high school, you were like, man, nobody has a bad word to say about him.
Yes.
Except that dude just shook me out of my shorts. And then he goes on to college, has the foundation that does such great stuff, goes on, wins a Super Bowl in the NFL. He lived his dream.
Sure.
He told us in high school, he was like, my dream's to play in the NFL. He didn't have the dream of winning a Super Bowl. He had the dream to play in the NFL. He lived his dream. And now he gets that honor. That's awesome, man. And like you said, super nice dude.
He really, really
Even when he saw us, he was like, you guys, what's going on?
You could tell he was proud of us.
Yeah, he was.
All right, now let's go to, I don't know,
and Woolchuck's proud of him
too. Woolchuck is excited. Let's go to the Tennessee-Kent State game. You might be like, I don't care about that game. Fair enough. I want to take you to cut number 13. This is announcers just, you know, talking about the body and stuff.
Are able to study the decomposition of bodies. About 200 there at any given time. But by the way, a donor waiting list of over 6,000 to donate their body to science, and whether it's NCIS or the Army, they all come to research what it looks like when the body decomposes at various stages of burial or non-burial. Would you donate your body? I think they'd really love to study it. Just everything that's going on. Insects would love it. Yeah. What would the maggots do with your hair?
Oh,
is there enough product in that to keep it around for a while?
I'll tell you what, with the product that's in it right now, it might be the last thing to go.
It would definitely stick around.
You know what's wild? All of it. I thought this was going to be a second half conversation.
I did too.
So, Tom, what do you want to talk about Saturday night? Well, the line's nearly 50. How about the body farm?
Dude,
I was gonna
that
say,
sounds like the KNC show right there.
I can only
right
hope one day to do a Ranger game and have that type of conversation.
I do too. Yeah. I'm dead serious. Awesome.
They just need to be
all
up.
I'm thinking is, what does the score have to be and what has to be going on in a Ranger game that I can do something like this?
15-0.
Yes,
after
in the
two
eight.
Innings.
Yeah.
No, after two innings, because this happened in the second quarter.
That's true.
Tennessee was up 51-0 with about 8 minutes left in the second quarter of this game.
I already have my story set up because my wife, when she went to TCOM in Fort Worth for her, you know, medical stuff. She's like, hey, you want to come see our dead body we've been, you know, working on? And I was like, oh, what color is the skin? And she said, oh, we've taken off all the skin. And yeah, I was like, right. No, I do not want to go see this.
The way she can, I get it. She's a doctor, but just casually mentioned.
Oh, the skin, yeah, we've taken off already done all that. The
skin. She's like, so what's the, she's asking the injury in the elbow. And I'm like, the Tommy John surgery. She's like, man, it's amazing you guys snap those so easy. They are so hard to cut through.
That's
okay. I desperately awesome. Want this to happen in a game
so
now.
Were you asking?
Are you going to donate your
general,
body to science?
Yeah, body farm.
What were your thoughts about?
I've heard of the body farm before.
Mike loved it.
Yeah.
Did you find that entertaining?
Yeah, man. I'll watch that game.
Okay. All right. Now, Carter, what am I to make of the Shedeur Sanders controversy? I know.
Is he like, good anymore?
Yeah, that's a great question too. So they beat Colorado State, and the Colorado State quarterback went up to shake his hand, at which point Shador looked like he started to point his finger at him and be like, you're talking all that crap on Instagram. And so then the Colorado State quarterback walked off and said, keep talking all that effing crap. And he was done. What are we to make of this? And is there any concern about, I don't know, the mental aspect of this quarterback?
I would be more concerned with what he said about his teammates last week, about his offensive line, how they sucked. Like this week, this is just beef, right?
Yeah. I mean,
this is just competitiveness. And this goes back to last year where these teams already didn't like each other, played in a very chippy game.
Personal stuff about families.
Colorado State knocked out Travis Hunter for a couple weeks last year in this game. So this just carries over. I think this is just good old fashioned, like just beef. This is just guys competing and just, I find this much less problematic than what he said about his own teammates before.
Fair enough. How problematic is it that Georgia hasn't got an NIL deal with Uber yet? Because they had yet another player arrested on charges of reckless driving. I believe that's up to like 22 in the last few years, different incidents. The hell is happening, and is that a natural fit for Georgia?
It is, and I guess is it going to take the 25th or the 26th before they finally do something about this?
I guess.
Ra-Ra Thomas was one of their top receivers coming into this year, and he got arrested for a driving Ra-Ra violation. Thomas. Yes, Ra-Ra Thomas was his name. He got kicked off the team, and he's the only one I could think of that there was actual, other than like maybe a game suspension or something like that, like he was just straight up kicked off the team. But that's just one guy out of 20 plus incidents. Like this is the cost of success, like, that they're going to continue to allow this to happen, but they keep winning
because
they're up to what, 42 or 41 straight
they
regular
broke the
season
SEC
wins.
Record, yeah.
Why'd you do regular season like that?
They keep throwing it up on the TV, but it's not a 41 game winning streak. It was a 31 game winning streak last year, but they don't count the championship game that they lost. The last two that they lost, because those are their last two losses. They weren't regular season, but they're not on like a 40 plus game winning streak total.
So it's kind of like when the Cowboys,
their home winning streak got snapped this past weekend. Yeah. And you're like, no, it didn't. Anything else that you feel like we need to know?
I just think the Washington State beating Washington this last weekend was incredibly fun to watch. The Pac-12, which I know Mike was questioning earlier if it still exists or not. It does. It's just Washington and Washington State.
I know. I was right next door for that game. I heard the crowd.
Yes, because you're up there in Seattle.
Yeah, the Apple Cup.
Pac-12 adds.
I had some apple pie.
Couple of Mountain West schools. And then Washington State goes and beats their hated rival who left them behind. Like, I just thought that was really cool. And the whole post-game scene with their head coach getting raised by his players with the trophy, I just thought was awesome.
Thank you very much, Carter Freeman. You are a wealth of information every single week.
Thank you, guys.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 Through the Fan. Coming up next, let's chit-chat with those fellas from the G-Bag Nation right here on 105 Through the Fan. KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 Through the Fan right now, courtesy of the good people at D&M Leasing. It's time for our chit-chat with those fellas from the G-Bag Nation. Gentlemen, how is you today?
Amazing. Hey, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you very much for asking. I have a basic football philosophy question for you guys that I forgot to ask you yesterday. So obviously the Saints demolished the Cowboys, but what I'm specifically curious about is that very first drive. The Saints get the ball and they decide to call a timeout with 11:34 left in the first quarter on their first drive, first and 10 at the Dallas 44. Is that what you guys would have done as well? Or are you like, I value these timeouts, I'll take the first and 15. We've had little to no problem moving the ball already. Where do y'all fall on that? I just found it interesting when they used the timeout. And I was like, I wonder if most people would do that.
They might have wanted to get to something.
Okay.
It might have been something in their first 15. That they wanted to make sure they got to, and they got a look that maybe they weren't too sure of. And so it's like, okay, do we want to continue with this one, or do you want to change what we're trying to do in the first 15? That would be my guess.
Okay.
I think that they were in shock. I think that they're like, hey, isn't this an NFL team we're playing? Shouldn't this be a little bit more difficult?
Just wanted to have that sidebar conversation.
They were just like all looking at each other, like, wait, I thought we were playing an NFL football team.
Is that really what you thought, Mike?
Yeah.
No, you know,
I do think that like a first half timeout is less important than the second half timeout.
Okay,
right?
There you go.
I think that's a huge piece of it as well.
Yeah, that's what I do. I'm definitely not doing that in the early third quarter. And if this is a close game already, I'm going to need all three of those.
Okay.
You saw last night.
I would agree with that. I would try to avoid that on your first opening drive, though.
Like, it is embarrassing.
Rule of thumb, I'm like, I'm trying not to burn a timeout in the first 5 minutes of the first quarter. But sure, if you did have something specifically, like you thought, okay, this is a good matchup for us,
yeah,
then why not?
What play did they run? I'm trying to think of what play.
Right after that, they ran
something that got about 8 yards.
It's a positive play. I know that.
It was actually
annexation to Puerto Rico.
It was 39-yard pass to Chris Olave that got him down to the 5 yards.
There you go. It sounds like a good use of the timeout.
Yeah.
They were thinking about something then with the crossing route there.
Okay.
Is what they maybe they
middle
they,
of the
maybe
field's they, wide open.
They didn't give it a they didn't they were thinking like, okay, we gotta look that we were going to take a shot here, and we got a look we didn't like. Let's see if they'll adjust this thing. And then
it works. Yeah.
You adjust, yeah.
I want to go to Jerry Cut number 11 and get y'all's feedback on this amazing interaction this morning between RJ Choppy and Jerry Jones. And I don't know, whatever thoughts you have about it are welcome.
Do you anticipate adding another running back at some point? I know Kareem Hunt's going. He's going to be visiting Kansas City today, you know, via signing or a trade.
Now, again, I'm really, I don't know what you're talking about as far as where you're looking, what you're talking about there. But still, I like what we are with our running backs. We've got good depth. We just didn't get to run them enough Sunday.
Okay. A couple of different things I thought.
He didn't know Kareem Hunt was available.
Or who he is. Or he thought that Choppy said Kareem Hunt's coming to visit y'all. Those are the only things
all could be in play.
Yeah.
But listening to him this morning, I feel like myself and I would think a lot of Cowboy fans' bloods were boiling. I mean, it was like a guy who was just totally clueless on really the state of his football team. And then when Sean's telling him your division rival, the Eagles, won the game.
He said he didn't know.
Which usually he is very plugged in on. Like, Jerry's usually on that. Like, I would have expected him to watch that game. But, you know, you're being asked about the offensive schemes and the Shanahan stuff, and you're throwing it back to the 90s when you first came in, and, oh, we ran a different defensive scheme. We went smaller and faster on defense. Dude, that was 30 damn years ago. Like, well, that's great that you were innovative then. Where's the innovation been whatsoever with this organization since then? There's been none. So stop bringing back 30 years ago and answer the damn question. What that means is you don't have a good answer to the question.
Yep.
And you are refusing to do anything about it. So it's just, it's in one ear and out the other. But it was maddening to listen to him blab all day today.
I thought the exact same thing. Let's see if we have the overshown question. If not, I can just give you the gist of it. They were talking about, hey, were you surprised Marvion Overshown didn't play more plays? And it felt like his answer was, yeah, you know, we were. So we'll get with the coaches and talk about that. I'm like, do you know how many plays he had? Do you know who they're talking about at this exact moment? I wasn't sure. And that frustrated me as well.
I think, that, you know, his answer to the, are you going to bring in another running back? I think that is, you know, a different kind of mismanagement that he just believes his running back room is good.
Yeah.
You know, like, what are you talking about? Why would
that's
I?
That's what I think that too.
I got
actually
Zeke and Deuce Vaughn. Everything is good. I
does
think he's been
or
selling.
The coaches telling him that. What do y'all think there? The coaches telling him, oh, we're good.
No,
there.
I think it's him selling.
Okay.
I think it's him selling the fans that aren't paying that much attention but still watch every Sunday.
It was, I think, well, Chuck, you put it very well. It was infuriating this morning.
It was beyond annoying. It really was. And what we should be doing is, like, we're having Chris Young on today at 4:20, the Rangers general manager.
Yep.
We should be talking to Will McClay every week is what we should be doing. He should be given the general manager role. I'd love to see what this team would look like if Will McClay had the final say on all this stuff. And the Jones family could focus on just being good owners, building the brand, doing an excellent job, and they're great at that. When it comes to constructing this football team, the only reason they're even relevant is because they draft well. And that's because of Will McClay and the scouting department.
We have attempted to ask him that question numerous times, and he says, when I bought this team, I decided I was never going to be working for anybody again. So it's never going to happen. So whenever people bring it up and we're like, what can you do? Not because I don't care, just because I know it's not going to change. What do you guys got coming up on the program today?
Pure Gold, as always. Heggie, thanks for asking. We have a really busy show. Yes, Kamar Rocker's going to join us at 3:10. And CY, a man who is accountable when the team underperforms.
He will join used us at the 4:20. Term embarrassed.
Yes. Are you embarrassed?
Roll home with the G-Vag Nation. Remember, tomorrow we got Ravens Cowboys ticket giveaway in the 10 a.m. and in the noon. So join the show 10 to 2 right here on the Fan.
Embarrassed, Kevin.
A little bit.